All right, guys, as promised, I brought a little bonus here this week. I have my good buddy Nate Lesler on to talk about some Fargo. So what Fargo was it we just watched?
Two.
Fargo season two. It is
yeah.
distinction because sadly Fargo season two is getting worse ratings than Fargo season
one. Yeah, that honestly shocked me. I guess I should never assume that quality affects ratings, but somehow it seems so good. I'm like, oh, everyone must know the show is so good.
It is,
but
and it
I guess
seems
not everyone does.
And compared to a lot of the other really good series on television right now, it seems the most accessible. Like,
yeah,
it's dealing with
ways,
very substantive and interesting,
right,
somewhat
plot,
dark
it's
material.
Right. It's not as like abrasive as like say the Nick or
even the Americans.
Or as slow paced as the Americans.
Yeah,
the Americans occasionally can then be. I mean, has like you know, act shit goes down, but
do you think it's the pacing or the content of the Americans that tends to shy away the more average viewer?
Or I think it's much more of a slow, steady 70s thriller, conspiracy thriller pacing. I think it's, and that, I mean, that and you have the scenes with the
the suitcase body.
the subtitles. I mean, they do all the Russian scenes
right.
and subtitles. And they have long dialogue scenes, but they're.
All right, guys, sorry about that. Our roommate came home and the dog started barking. But, Nate, okay, you were talking about. We were talking about the pacing of the Americans.
Yeah, I just think the dialogue scenes tend to not spell things out as much as even like some non-network shows. I mean, network shows tend to do that more, but even some like HBO shows it's all in the subtleties in the Americans. And I think that is when you have a slow, like long dialogue scene that's with subtitles that's not super like...
not directly engaging.
Yeah, expository in a way that in an engaging manner, it definitely can turn people off. And so I guess that's not doing great with ratings either. To go back to what wasn't that what how did the American
it was a similar effect
to other
suffering in
other
the ratings,
shows. But
ratings.
I guess yeah. So, but what like you were saying, I think Fargo. I think there's a mass appeal to it. I think I think there's huge potential to have a large mass appeal to it, and that's why I'm so shocked that the ratings aren't doing well, because I would expect them to be, I mean, not like great, not like a network hit TV show or even like a HBO like Game of Thrones, nowhere near that big, but I would expect something, you know, more akin to American Horror Story, at least. I mean, I don't know how the ratings are for that, but that seems to have a pretty strong fan base.
I know. It's funny you brought that up, because definitely the fan base for that, I believe, is, like, declining a little bit.
Yeah.
But, like, I agree. It definitely has probably seen much stronger ratings than both Fargo and the Americans. And I think it did interesting things its first season. I saw a couple, but it's not.
The Americans make sense to me, though, for its ratings. This season of Fargo really doesn't, because it was a good season, you know, FX crime drama, a good like first season, and such a great pilot, you know, or if I guess it really is technically a pilot because it's not the start
premiere.
Of the series,
yeah,
but premiere. To I mean, but it was the start of a new story, you know. So
I know we've brought up. The whole, like, classic, oh, I can't wait for the entire season to be up on Netflix dilemma.
Right.
Which I think, and I think for the type of individual who will want to watch a show like that, that's definitely, could be advantageous to them. Like,
oh, definitely.
I definitely did not, well, because I was in New York and didn't have cable, I definitely did not watch the first season of Fargo when it was on air. I, like, definitely watched it in the fall.
I didn't either. I watched it in the fall, too.
But after that, like, that made me really excited to, you know, like, not have to wait for
the whole
season, you know?
No, for sure. It's surprising. Because, I mean, yeah, I think there is a mass appeal. I think it has a good hook. I think it's a good, you know, funny, exciting drama. And so I'm sort of floored that it's not. I mean, again, wouldn't expect it to be the hit of the year.
No,
but,
not at all. But like,
but I would.
I mean, FX is airing a show called
salt.
"Fucking Bastard Executioner."
Oh, that's right. That's
and it's,
right.
I'd be, and this
let's,
is
let's,
suffering
let's compare,
ratings.
I'm fascinated to know the ratings of Bastard Executioner compared to Fargo. I'll bring that up later.
Episode. Please, if you could find those,
I'll get that going.
But
in the
I'm kind of really sad about that. I hope. I think it's getting enough critical attention that like FX won't drop this series.
Oh no, I don't think. Like, I think it's right now getting such great reviews. They won't do that.
Yeah, I mean, and they've moved into a sphere. We're like, yeah, we're making quality television,
and we're
doing an OJ story now.
Because it is an anthology series. There's more potential than if you have a really. I mean, look at like what The Leftovers did this season. They practically almost made themselves an anthology series by just like breaking off and being like, you know, continuing but like doing something completely different.
So when
you have that setup where you can totally be an anthology series, it gives you more room to say what, you know, especially if it's creatively that didn't work, which this season's going great creatively,
yeah.
But you know, say what worked, what didn't, and you have a chance to reform.
Yeah, it increases the odds of your longevity.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Every year,
exactly, because you can won't do that again. It's not like, oh well, now that we killed off these characters and you know did this weird thing like you know Lost, you know.
And I mean, with an anthology, I always think you know, like I feel like you know, True Detective hit a wall because of its writer. Let's be real here.
Yeah, bad script. I mean, the second season's just a bad script.
I think what scares networks and what scares writers away from anthology storytelling is that compared to a regular series where, like, you have your fan base that's just, like, directly in love with the cast and certain characters, the certain mini arcs he experiences, like, throughout an entire series, there's less of that expectation. Like, oh, my God, how are they going to top me now?
Right.
Which is why, you know, a lot of, like, I feel like late coming fans to Mad Men were, like, at the end of the final season, which I've still not finished, but I was based on reviews I've read, like, oh, like, it didn't wow me. It didn't, like, explode and wow me. I'm like, well, that's...
Yeah, that's not the show.
We're not watching Lost or, like, freaking Heroes.
So Bastard Executioner started with higher ratings, but has now fallen and actually is doing worse. This would be a show I'm not surprised if FX were to cancel.
Oh, I hope
it
does.
Or to give one more season.
Well, okay.
I mean, look, The Bridge, they were like, oh, not doing great. But it got good in this. It got really good in the second season, right? The first season was
really interesting, and it was really good until people were like, Jesus, so they did the exact same story as the Danish show. That was when people were like, this. Second season, they took all of the great elements from the first season, but just wrote something original. I just think, you know, the ratings again.
Right. No.
But like my main thing about The Bridge, and sorry, I know this is falling off a little, is purely because, you know, I have no idea like what that whole border culture world is. And my only like minor interactions with it on film and television are like, you know, in like a drug in like freaking Fast and the Furious or like traffic.
Right.
So like it did such an interesting portrayal of that relationship to me that that's what really drew me in. And then what won me over were a lot of the side characters.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah.
Back to Fargo.
Yeah, back to Fargo. More importantly.
I have a question for you, which is what do you make of, how do you feel about, there's some weird things this season that are sort of out of place or in place, depending on how you look at it. I'm curious what you think about the UFOs and also Reagan. And I'm drawing a comparison between the two, even though I have different opinions. And when I say Reagan, I'm specifically referring to the actor portraying Reagan running his campaign that we saw in the
episode. He's Sam on Burn Notice on USA. He's also like that obnoxious usher in the Spider-Man franchise.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In the second franchise? First
he's
franchise?
He's the one in the first franchise. He's the one.
Is he in multiple movies?
I think he's in the first, the second, and the third movie. He's the one who doesn't let him in.
Oh, right,
Because he's like late
that.
And stuff.
I remember that. Yeah, but but that's true. New York theater, you can't, dude. You can't
no, no,
late.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, Peter Parker fucked up.
And then he's the waiter who helps with the proposal in the third Spider-Man with James Franco.
Switches roles?
Yeah, I mean, like, because he's such, like, in one scene, he's, like, just now a waiter.
I love when, this is really quickly off topic, but I love when directors use actors. I'm totally forgetting of my examples, I know, but in multiple places. In
no, world. Yeah, it's like kind of a
Tarantino thing. Has done that. It definitely happens in Kill Bill. There's an actor who's in the first and the second. Actually, I think there's a couple that play multiple roles that he was like, ha ha, no one's going to notice this.
but yeah, so, but, okay, so in terms of Reagan, yeah. I agree. I thought it was, it seems like one of those choices that was like, hey, we have this idea, let's see how it plays out, where like it didn't feel intentional or like, it didn't feel connected enough to the narrative for me. Like a writer was like, oh, okay, we need Reagan for this reason. He's going to do this, this, and this.
Right.
For them, it did feel kind of just like, this might be interesting. Let's do that. Because, like, it's so unimpactful. Do you even really remember the conversation he had with Patrick Wilson? Like, I remember the gist of it.
Yeah, yeah, I get
it. Like, that was the most interesting part of that. Right. And why did we need to, like, see him,
you know, pontificate on stage? I don't know. No, it should have been, to me, it's not been a big problem, but some of the, like, 70s, the references and stuff have been, like, a little, like, in your face, but this was the, like, but not enough, not in a way that's problematic, really.
Okay.
And this was the point for me where it crossed over. And this is, again, this is like a perfect show in every other regard, and I think that's why this Reagan thing annoyed me most. It was like just that
it's
thing
like you
that
could
I
do
didn't
better.
Like that I didn't like that was making it no longer that was getting away in the way of that episode was so perfect in every other way.
Right.
And so I guess the reason I connected that, I mean, it took me out of it. I felt like the scene that happened between him and Ed could have happened. I mean, I don't know what they were going. I don't get why it really needs to be Reagan. I mean,
the other hard part for me is like we did just spend a long time talking about that actor, but like
true.
He, you know, you describe him, he's kind of like a caricature.
Yeah,
himself.
Exactly. Of a very strong.
And it didn't cross over well with Reagan for me. And I think it's because I hate him so much. I just have this ingrained.
You hate the actor? Or you hate Reagan?
No, I hate Reagan.
Oh, really?
So like,
okay.
It's just like this ingrained old wrinkly. you have an aircraft carrier named after you. You smug asshole thing. Sorry. Anyway. and onto the the whole UFO thing, I love it because it feels playful, like they constantly are trying to do with this show.
Yeah.
Where it's going, I have no idea, but I kind of like it. It's light enough and like detached from the story enough where like it seems like a fun side
piece.
But that still to me just feels like an Easter egg. That clearly is not going to remain an Easter egg.
That's my question. I could see it coming in a minor way in the end, in which that it sort of stays this mysterious. I'm trying to remember how it was worded in one review I read, but sort of this. It's just sort of this. Oh, there's weird stuff out there we don't understand.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
It's just that's just sort of going to be the. That's just part
case.
Of it. Yeah, yeah. or that it comes in sort of a minor way in a small moment, which is not critical to the plot, but has significant thematic and narrative significance. Significance, huh? But I used the same word twice. That's why
okay.
I was laughing.
I used lens like 50 times in my last podcast.
But I also could see it coming in and being a deus ex machina of sorts, that it like the lat because they sort of had one of those in the previous in the season with in episode 6 when with the dude, what's the name of the dude who owned the like supermarket and like
the fish tornado situation.
Yeah
like I felt the same way when I saw that too, but like me and my roommate did some rumors. I mean, not rumors, did some research after
that's
that.
That's the thing, yeah.
And apparently that is a thing that does happen. So like
God, you need to see Magnolia.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I may have said too much.
Oh no, oh no. Magnolia. Okay. Oh, dude, I'm very down to watch Magnolia. But whereas the UFO to me is just something that like we know is less like
yeah,
it's
that's
more
true.
Mythical.
That's true.
I mean, not like scientific
right.
mythical.
But the reason I connected to Reagan was because they both sort of pop. They both seem sort of somewhat random, even though I like one.
Yeah,
they're both these sort of random things that pop in, and I could see the UFO being a like weird encounter Patrick Wilson, where it's somehow like sort of no, that's too cheesy for Fargo, but some odd encounter he has with it at the end where it's sort of
in some weird, not direct way,
factors into the plot and sort of
excuse me.
I'm not sure, you know.
No, I get what you mean. Like,
so what do we actually? We've seen like a, yeah.
Sorry. No, but like something abstract. Like, there's a final shootout, and he's like face. I'm not saying this is gonna happen.
Yeah,
at all,
yeah, yeah.
But like some confrontation between him and Dodds,
right,
that results in him seeing something fantastical, and like remember his wife is dying,
right? Yeah.
And I think that's gonna be super connected to that.
Like,
people dying.
I bet you're so right. I bet that's exactly what plot line. I'm not sure how, but the UFOs is gonna connect in whether it's in a major way or a minor
right.
moment.
Because
it's gonna connect in with her cancer.
Because he owns a diner in this first season. Right?
Does he? I didn't.
He's like your ex-cop, and he runs the diner now.
Oh, in the first season.
In the first season.
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah. Yes, that sounds right. Yes, I remember that. Molly goes to see.
That's why I was so initially curious about Patrick Wilson's casting, because the vibe I got from the character in the first season was like very like gentle old soul.
Who
like evolved from a good-hearted guy who just saw a lot of, like, stuff. But, like, I love Patrick Wilson. It's great.
Yeah.
And it's not that I think he's a bad person, but there's something feels restless in him. Maybe this is just because I haven't dealt with, like, some personally really close,
very
like...
very calm to me.
But I think maybe that's what feels out of place for me. Like, in every scene he's at home, I always feel like he doesn't want to be there.
Interesting.
But I could be reading into how they're playing the cancer tension.
I want to go back and rewatch all of season one of Fargo, and then also rewatch the first episodes or season two, or maybe wait till the end of season two and watch all of that.
Okay, so I remember in that Vulture podcast they did a comparison. Like, it was like, oh well, Fargo season one was more like the actual Fargo
movie.
Whereas this, like, I think they threw out No Country for Old Men, which is why I just wanted to watch that.
Did they actually throw that out?
I thought they did.
I know, because they were talking specifically about how they don't find it to be particularly Coen-esque, which I sort of disagree with in some ways. But I don't think they actually did throw out.
They didn't throw. Okay.
No Country. But what were you going to say about No Country?
Well, I was going to say, it's hard for me because I don't really remember the original Fargo movie very well.
Right.
The pieces in this story don't directly align with No Country, but if you had to like pick three male characters like at the forefront, you could kind of do it, or four, you do a panel,
exactly.
It's harder.
I can see that. There's some weird parallels in terms of the older cop and...
Okay.
But yeah.
I'm gonna let you talk a little more. The one thing,
I don't think I have anything about the latest episode to add. At least, I'm sure I do, but nothing off the top of my head.
My big question is, the one thing I actually don't like are the scenes between Dodd and his daughter, and her role in all of this. His daughter is the one sleeping with Mike Milligan, the black guy. And, like, every scene with her, he's always kind of, like, hitting her.
What scenes with...
Typewriter salesman?
Yeah.
They bury him in sand, right?
Yeah.
Before he gets there... I mean, before they do that, because Dodd's the one who, like, orders it.
Yeah.
She's the one that figures out the connection, and she's there. And, like... She's wearing like a shirt, and he, instead of like hugging her, kind of just like, "You embarrassing me, girl," and just shoves her in the car. You're dressing like that, and like hits her in the face. And like in this
I don't actually remember what's in the most recent one.
He hit her in the face again. And there's that whole scene where the mom comes in and is like, "You get away from that girl."
I think I'm picturing the. I think as soon as I see it, it's going to come back. I'm like, oh, that's what you mean. Because as crazy as it sounds, I can remember so much of this latest episode, and I don't. That does not remotely.
Maybe I could also be like over pronouncing it, but like there was definitely a quote. Gene Smart says, "You get away from that girl, honey. You go upstairs."
Was it on the porch? Was it right before the scene where he goes out on the porch with his brothers there, and they have that weird.
I think it's after that.
Okay.
I think it's near the end of the episode. It's nighttime, and it's in the kind of like the foyer of their home. Well, I mean, my main question was like, it's distracting to me. It doesn't make me. I don't want to dislike Dodd a ton because he already does that. He already seems like the stupid, arrogant. Like it should be all mine, brother. And I don't need other reasons to hate him. I would like more reasons to be interested in him.
I think he's probably the most one-dimensional character on the show.
Yeah, and this whole, I hate treating my daughter like this thing doesn't... It's not that it feels out of place. It just feels very unnecessary to me.
Right, right.
And I just wonder... I'm trying to help rationalize the choice.
I think it might be clear... I think it might be going somewhere with it, but also... It might not be, and if that's the case, I'm guessing it's probably just cliched, abusive dad character. I don't know how much rationalization there is behind it. I mean, unless we'll see. I mean, it might go somewhere, but I don't. But okay. I also need to rewatch it.
No, I mean, this is fine. This is just me listening to too much of like, oh, do we need the character to be a rapist to know he's a bad person? I know there's like...
No, I agree.
Fargo writers, I'm not mad at you. I'm just... This is just me, you know, my feelings.
What writers?
Fargo.
Oh, Fargo.
But, okay. We're wrapping up. My last question is...
Yeah.
So we do know the Dodd's nephew, Bear's son, who's like the one who wanted to go back to school, is not dead.
Yes.
So... He took a bullet either in the shoulder or, like, near the head off the ricochet and is not dead. The last thing he said was he wanted to go back to school.
Yeah.
So, I guess, like, I'm just wondering how they're going to use him. If they're going to use him to close this arc at the end of episode 7 and then kind of, like, do a time skip later.
They could. I'm honestly not sure. I could very much see his character having played his role and going back to and leaving.
Okay. Because I guess the main question was, when you saw that happen, did you think that he could lead to like a closing for this part of the story?
Possibly, but that I don't not think strong. That's okay. Yeah, no. I mean that he definitely could be their ace in the hole. The writer's ace in the hole for. In terms of constructing the narrative, but
nothing of purposely. I guess I think it's because like I personally like love the Kristen Stewart, Jesse Plemons, the Bloomfield scenes.
Yeah.
But like, I'm just because there's not as much like. I don't know. There's not the gangster tension around them. I sometimes kind of cast them off.
No, for sure.
So like, I know there's so much. They're going to be so much more connected in the story. But dude, it's been great talking. I love watching this show.
The show
with you.
Is so good.
I wish it was on. So okay, I'm starting to wish it was on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it should be a Sunday night show, but whatever. I wonder if that would affect the ratings.
Man. Or if it would have to compete with more stuff.
That's true. Especially with football and.
Yeah, well, I guess
there's Monday Night Football too. I don't know what they're thinking.
Eventually, well, I mean, Supergirl's on Monday after Monday Night Football, so yeah, I don't know.
Doable.
But I don't know. It'd be awesome, listeners, if you started watching.
Yeah,
Fargo.
We highly recommend Fargo to everyone. I can't think of. I mean, I'm also not watching that much, but it's the best TV drama I've seen in a while. I mean, you're watching The Nick, which I'm not. And
I am watching a lot of TV, and you hear me talk about it on this podcast. If I had to tell you of the three shows, the Fargo, The Nick, or The Leftovers to watch, which you would enjoy the most, is the easiest to absorb, and you can have the most fun with, it's definitely Fargo.
Right, yeah,
which, if it makes it a better show, I don't know. But it's the one I'm arguably enjoying on watching regularly.
It's just been so consistent, too, so far.
It's so funny.
Yeah, it is.
In so many ways. It's God. All right, guys. Thanks.
That's it for this week.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'll probably bring Nate on a lot more in the future. So have a great weekend,
definitely
guys.
Definitely touch base on Fargo again in a few weeks.
For sure. Especially when more shit happens.
Peace.
Peace.